And it's a pleasure to be here to discuss a few ideas that I've been trying to put together. I am going to begin by situating my presentation around the big theme of this meeting, which is about security, and this particular panel, which is about youth and population, which is my area of expertise. So I try to link population, youth, and security, and somehow bring them together. Now, these three themes have been in the news quite a bit, and you would recognize some of the events that we've been watching or listening to, Boko Haram last year and throughout, but also these events in Burkina Faso that Ambassador actually discussed over lunch. But also beyond the intranational sphere, you have this sort of security and violence concern across borders, either in the context of migrants trying to move north or even within the region and being not necessarily welcome. You also have the same situation within countries in the form of low-grade violence, daily muggings, and security concerns of that nature. And so as we try to make sense of these concerns over security and violence, there are a set of explanations that we tend to resort to. We've talked about the environmental pressure, we've talked about governance, we've talked about poverty, and we talked about population. And this is the last nexus that I try to expand. Typically, when we've discussed population as a concern, there was a tendency to emphasize Malthusian concern over rapid population growth or the size of the population growth. And I want to extend that argument to suggest that there's another mechanism by which population can matter, and it has to do with variation in demographic behavior and how it affects inequality, and the repercussions of inequality end up affecting security concerns. And this is an argument that I call uneven demographic dividend. And this is really the theme that I'm going to develop throughout the presentation. And so this is how it goes. Number one, if you begin to see class differences in demographic behavior, not just in fertility behavior, but also in a set of behavior having to do with marriage and family structure, that feeds into a lot of inequality among youth. This inequality trickle up from early childhood all the way to adolescence and the transition from school to work. And especially at the nexus of this transition from school to work, that it can actually trigger violence. And so this is really the chain that I'm going to work us through. There's a bigger slide, set of slides that's available. I'm just going to try to hit the main points along this chain. Now, and I'm going to work this chain in reverse order. First, I'm going to establish, number one, that is the link between inequality and violence. Then I'm going to talk about the extent of inequality in Africa to stress the fact that it's actually under-discussed. And finally, I'm going to look at the effect of population change on inequality. So I'm going to look at these three points in that order. Let's begin with the first. That is the nexus between inequality and violence. And I'm going to be brief here just to say that this is a link that is plausible in theory, whether you think about economic theories of crime or sociological theories dealing with how inequality affects community participation or social trust. There's the expectation, at least in theory, that inequality, large inequality, should lead to violence. But in practice, this is a relationship that is very hard to test empirically and convincingly. You can always have studies like this that do macro correlation between inequality and violence, and indeed they find this kind of pattern in which the greater the inequality in a country, the greater the amount of violence. But it's not going to be a universal. This is a relationship that is likely to be highly contingent. It's going to depend on the level of analysis that you are discussing. It's going to depend on the amount, the level of inequality, whether you have extreme inequality. It's going to depend on whether inequality is associated with opportunity or not, and so forth. So it's not a straightforward universal case. But nonetheless, we are going to proceed with the assumption that at least from this theoretical standpoint, this is a plausible relationship, that inequality is likely to contribute to violence. Okay, so that's the first link. The second link, which I'm touching, is the extent of inequality. Again, I have many slides on this particular topic. But what I just want to point out is three facts. First of all, inequality is high in Africa. This is a fact that is not often acknowledged. In 2012, there was a study that mapped global inequality, and one of these maps compared all the countries in the world against the US. And if you look at sub-Saharan Africa in particular, including the Sahel region, you find that many countries in Africa had higher levels of inequality than the US at a time when the US was at its own historical high. And so that's quite impressive. Not only this, if you take the top 10 most unequal countries in the world, typically in those rankings you routinely have 5 to 6 countries coming from Africa. They're not from the West African region. They tend to come from the South or the Central region. But nonetheless, the Sahel is not immune to inequality. So that's something that is not often acknowledged. One thing that is also not acknowledged is that if you look at inequality between countries in Africa, that is how much countries vary or are diverse in terms of the economic position, the inequality, economic inequality between African countries has been rising since 1990. So there's an upward trend in inequality between countries. Third, inequality is not confined to inequality in incomes. It also affects substantive outcomes such as health and schooling. So inequality is high in Africa, in some cases is increasing, and is something that is not often discussed. Now, there are many reasons why it's not often discussed. I have a detailed discussion of these reasons. Maybe it's a competition with the dominant paradigm of poverty. Maybe the expectation that at least some of the inequality is inevitable or that it's going to be short-lived, etc. But the most important reason that I want to emphasize here is that typically when we think about inequality, we think about inequality for the entire population, rather than inequality for some subsections of the population, for instance, inequality among youth particular. How do youth, different youth compare amongst themselves? And yet, if we really want to understand the link between inequality and violence, it makes sense to pay attention to the specific inequality that you have among youth for at least three reasons. The first is that, well, there's a clear age pattern of violence that has been documented in many countries. So the levels of participation in violence at both ends of the equation tend to be higher here in the adult groups. And so if inequality it matters for violence, this is where it's going to matter most. And so we ought to pay attention to this gray zone here. Second is inequality matters in terms of reference groups. It's about keeping up with the Joneses. Okay, a 20-year-old person is not going to bemoan a 60-year-old person for having a house and a car. On the other hand, they're going to feel less comfortable if all of their peers are better off than they are. And so we need to pay attention to group-specific inequality as opposed to generalized notion of inequality. Okay. And so having said this, inequality matters. It's important, but it's under-discussed. The last point that I want to develop is the third, which is the link between demographic change and inequality. And here, this is the main argument that I call the uneven demographic dividend. What I mean by this is that, well, class differences in demographic behavior translate into inequality among children, and these inequalities work their way throughout adulthood and so forth. Okay, and so that I'm going to just give you a little bit of detail on that particular notion. Now, the thesis that I built here is spins off the notion of the demographic dividend, which is represented here, which is the notion that, well, as a country's birth rate goes down, you have a transformation in age structure, and then this transformation in age structure and a reduction in dependency ratio makes it possible to increase savings and investment and ultimately stimulates economic growth. Okay, so that's a tenable argument, but I modify it on three key points. First point is that I say that the end product is not just growth, it can be also about inequality. The second point is that we need to make a clear distinction between age dependency and economic dependency. Just because somebody turns 15 or 16 or because they turn 21 does not mean that they leave the ranks of the dependent. They need to find a job before they become actually a support. And the third point is that the only demographic behavior that matters is not just aggregate fertility decline. Rather, we ought to pay attention to the distribution of fertility in the population, but also all other changes in demographic behavior, including marriage, family structure, and so forth. And so if you consider all this, you can understand how differences in demographic behavior are going to lead to inequality among youth. And so there's a simple equation that we can all relate to here. From a resource dilution perspective, the resources that a child is going to have are going to depend primarily on three factors. Number one, they're going to depend on the family income. Number two, they're going to depend on the family propensity to invest in children in general. And number three, they are going to depend on the number of children that they have to take care of. And so if you have inequality in either one of these factors here, you're going to have growing inequality among children. And so what I argue is that many demographic variables affect inequality in either income, propensity to invest in children, or the number of dependents that they have. And some of these demographic behaviors are listed here, and I'm going to just to showcase the ones that are in red pretty quickly. And so if we take fertility behavior, for instance, okay, I show here data for several Sahel countries, and in each country I show the birth rate separated by class from the lower socioeconomic group to the higher socioeconomic group. And to simplify this, I put a ratio of the bottom to the top group, which is an indicator of the inequality that you have in that particular country in terms of birth rate. Okay, the bigger the number, the bigger the inequality. And I have separated the countries that have higher fertility here, and the countries that have slightly lower fertility here. And so if you compare roughly the two groups, you can see that you have bigger numbers here at the bottom compared to the top, meaning that as the countries go through their demographic transition, certainly the birth rate goes down, but what also happens is that you start having class differences in demographic behavior, and those class differences in demographic behavior are going to feed into inequality. The same thing holds true if you look at a factor that Ambassador just talked about, which is maternal control of domestic resources. Essentially, the question here is, what is the percentage of women who control decision-making over large purchases, okay? And you do the same analysis. Bigger numbers represent greater amount of inequality. And here you compare countries with higher birth rates and lower birth rates. And you can see here that even as these countries sort of reduce their birth rate, you have increasing differentiation between the rich and the poor in the extent to which women control the resources. And so that is going to also affect the inequality in the extent to which in the resources that children have, okay? Third and final point on this count here, the same is true with teenage motherhood. Teenage motherhood affects other outcomes later in life, the extent to which you can have formal employment and so forth. And if you do the same analysis, you have the same result essentially. As countries advance in their demographic transition, sure, the birth rates go down, but they also become more unequal. And this is going to affect inequality among children. Okay, so that's the bottom line. A wide host of demographic behaviors shape inequality in the resources that children are going to have. And ultimately, these inequalities are going to work themselves through the life cycle. Okay, first in childhood, they're going to affect child survival, inequality in child survival. They're going to affect inequality in schooling. And most importantly for this group here, they're going to affect inequality in the transition from school to work. And so inequality in the extent to which the young adults are going to remain unemployed after they leave school. And that is one of the contributors, in my estimation, to the violence, the different kinds of violence that we have talked about here. Okay. So in summary, the argument of an uneven demographic dividend is a slight corrective to the argument of a demographic dividend. When we talk about the demographic dividend, we expect countries in the Sahel and other African countries to boost their economic growth as their fertility goes down. And that can happen, in fact, is happening already in some, we see first signs of this happening in a few countries. But at the same time, we have to be concerned about the inequality that is going to accompany this process and the implication that this is going to have for violence. And so this is the challenge, that is, we likely to have growth in inequality. There are a few suggestions here that I have proposed, not that I have proposed, that I have really compiled. There's a fair amount of work that has been done on how to address this youth unemployment and inequality in youth unemployment. And so this is the standard stuff. I have added a few ideas here that expand beyond the marketplace, because the transition into adulthood is more than just getting a job. But more importantly, there's an element that I haven't included here, because as you recall, a lot of these inequalities have to do with demographic behavior. And so to what extent, to the extent that we can act on some of these drivers of inequality in resource endowment of children, we can begin to slightly correct the inequalities that are going to work themselves through the life cycle. And with this, I'm going to stop.